You can interact with us so many ways. Go to www.emsgarage.com. Email us, emsgarage@gmail.com. Go to our Twitter account, @emsgarage. Or you can download us on iTunes. Just search EMS Garage. You can also call us, 303-720-6001.
The EMS Garage. Staying there, they're
in the middle of a dark SUV. Parked in the
7-Eleven lot. Almost ran into the store with
his
vehicle.
Checking out right now. Okay, I got DC on the phone there. Wanted to know if you could handle that call as well. Just confirming you are checking the patient.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the EMS Garage. This is episode 47, the unnamed episode so far. I'm sure we'll come up with a name by the end, as we always do. We always have fun when we do these podcasts, because I never know what the name's going to be, and we try to do that. Thanks for joining us again, yet again another week. You know, the funny thing is I found out this week, and I was a little... I'm not disturbed by it, I guess. I'm actually pretty happy about it, but my mom listens to these podcasts. She goes, I went to the house the other day. She's like, yeah, I listen to them all the time. I'm like, oh. She goes, I really don't understand it. And she said, could you sometimes explain the acronyms you use? Because I don't really understand them all. I'm like, yes, Mom. I said, but it is for EMS Insiders. She goes, well, it still would be nice. So tonight we're gonna do as much as we can to talk about, to lessen the acronyms, in case you aren't familiar with them. But I'm your host, Chris Montero, and joining me tonight is Mr. Skip Kirkwood. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. How are you this evening?
Good. Fresh from the land of the Amish?
Yes, indeed.
Hey, did you see Dr. Bledsoe's, he's a friend of mine on Facebook, but he posted these pictures. He went to an Amish EMS system.
I did not go there with him, but we were both at the Pennsylvania State EMS Conference in Hershey, which was, it may either be in or just 30 or 40 miles west of the heart of Amish country. And Dr. Bledsoe was heading over there the morning after the conference to do, he's working on an article on religion in EMS, and he was very excited, and some of the folks from EMS agencies in Amish country were at the conference, and we sat and talked with them for a little while, and they were taking him to breakfast the following morning, going to show him their operation, and I'm very interested to see what he comes out with.
Now, I'm curious. Are they horse-drawn ambulances?
I don't know.
Okay.
I know that I have been to Amish country before, and the horse-drawn wagons were prevalent on the street. Now, I know that they have made some adaptations in the rules by which they operate, and I found that because again, about the same distance away from the conference, my wife's brother lives and has a horse farm, and we visited them on the Saturday after the conference, and they had some run-in sheds for the horses that had been manufactured by Amish craftsmen. And the craftsmanship in this rough lumber was absolutely beautiful. But he told me that he was able to call them on the telephone. There was apparently a community phone that you could use to communicate with members of the Amish community, despite their rules about technology and modern society and stuff. But I'm dying to see what Brian has to say, because I have, it's an area of which I'm completely ignorant.
Well, maybe I'll ask him. I'll be like, hey, it'd be kind of nice to come on and talk to us about that, because I'm very curious as well. And I'm always very interested in cultures like that, like the Amish especially, where they have made a conscious decision to live life a certain way, but yet as all this technology advances, have they bent their rules a little bit? Have they changed their method of operation just because of, you can't you can't find things like you used to be able to, even to live very simply. So I my hat's off to it, because I think that would be just the most amazing thing. But I'm into this movie series right now about the Old West, and I'm like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to be able to live like that? And then I go, but then I wouldn't have internet, so I don't know, maybe not. But thanks for joining me tonight, Skip. And Mr. Kyle Bates joins us again this week. He's
how you doing?
He's on his way to the NAMSE conference. Hello, sir.
Good. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm very good. Your week was well, I take it?
Very well. Hot up here. Went from rain to hot.
In New York, huh?
Yeah. We actually had summer finally came.
Well, you're going to Orlando, right?
Yeah, so it's getting me prepared for that.
I was going to say, yeah, like 99 and 99% humidity. It's going to be a little toasty.
Sticky, get away from me type day.
Yeah.
Where in New York are you?
Buffalo.
Oh, okay. I'm a Tonawanda kid.
Actually, that's where I am. I work for the town of Tonawanda.
You do? Are you one of the town of Tonawanda paramedics?
brand new, right into the job a few months ago.
Why? Cool. That's okay. It's nice to know my mom, brothers, and sisters are all in good hands.
Excellent.
With a fellow EMS garager. Vicinity of Parkhurst and Brighton.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm over by practice there in Elmview area.
A proud graduate of Kenmore East High School, class of 1971.
Excellent. I won't tell you what I was doing in 71.
Did it involve being in a womb, by chance?
Probably around there, yeah.
That's how I spent 1971 as well. So.
All right, Skip.
And while I was at this Pennsylvania conference, I happened to have the pleasure of meeting Dr. Jeff Myers.
Oh, yes.
It was nice to know that mom, dad, and company are all in good hands. Very strong advocate for EMS, and you guys are lucky to have him.
Oh, he's absolutely great. I just finished writing a couple chapters for his new book coming out.
Very sweet. Cool. Wow, hey, the world gets smaller every time I get on the show, I swear.
You know, I talk so often about EMS, I tell everybody in EMS knows someone in EMS and knows someone. Mm-hmm. It's such a small world no matter where you are.
And it goes back to my original thing about saying never piss off anybody in EMS, because you never know who your next boss is going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You could walk in the next day and go, oh, you're my boss? Great. Yeah. Sorry about that thing I said about you. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, and it's so true. Our industry is so small. And the more I get out on Twitter and Facebook and I just get to meet people, and I love going to the Wyoming State EMS conference. I'm going to say that right up front. It is the last great EMS conference, small EMS conference, probably in the United States. They have a third of their EMTs in the state come to this conference. But yet, you go there and you feel like family. It's like I work in their state and they welcome me with open arms, and it's just, I just absolutely love going there. So that's why I feel like our community, or our industry should really be about. And Skip, you just recently wrote an article about traditions and ceremonies in EMS, and that article really touched on this idea of brotherhood and how we can set up tradition. But do you want to set up the topic a little bit, and we can go from there?
Well, the article was about ceremonies and traditions in EMS, and it was essentially an educational piece, just describing some of the various opportunities that exist in EMS for folks to utilize ceremony and establish tradition in their agencies for celebrating the good, and kind of making us, making members of the profession a little more aware of the brotherhood, the sisterhood, the comradeship that we could have. I've had a belief for some time that we essentially QA ourselves to death. Always looking at the, generally focusing on the negative aspects of what has troubled us throughout the last couple of days. And we rarely take the time to celebrate all the good that we do. And, I think that with some leadership attention, every agency in its own way can utilize ceremony of one sort or another and develop traditions in the agency and the community that it works with, and put forth a more positive image to the community and just generally feel better about themselves.
Well, you brought up several points in this, and I'll start, I guess, by talking about a few of them. One is the Honor Guard, and I got to tell you, if you go on our website, if you go to emsgarage.com and click on the article about ceremony and tradition, you're going to see, scroll down about halfway, and you're going to see the coolest staff I've ever seen with a snake on it. Oh, absolutely.
The snake on a stick.
Yeah, I can never remember that. I know how to spell it. I can never say it. So anyway.
That's the staff of Asclepius.
Thank you.
and I don't know what it means, except that if you're going to the Wyoming EMS conference, it probably means they caught something tasty for dinner and they're going to cook it.
It's really awesome, I got to tell you. But it's like it's really something to set us apart. And I love the uniform, and it's very naval, and I just love it. So,
well, that device, I mean, that's a perfect example of an opportunity to be creative.
Right.
Now, the guys who did that said, hey, you know, we go to parades, you see the police honor guards with, you know, generally carry rifles as the means by which they guard the colors. And if you see a fire service honor guard, they generally carry pike poles or axes as their weapon of guarding the colors. And these guys said, well, you know, what could we do with EMS? And they devised, you know, taking the staff as it's depicted in the Star of Life and turning it into a full-length implement. And if I remember the story right, and it's been quite some time, they commissioned a local artist to make a casting that was then turned into the final product. And that staff leads the entire procession in and out of the cathedral at the National EMS Memorial Service.
Oh, that's great.
And that comes from Sedgwick County, Kansas. Is that right?
It says Sedgwick County. I would assume that's Kansas. There's one in Colorado, but I don't think it's ours.
That's so. Sedgwick County, Kansas, is where those guys come from. Wow. First-class honor guard, a lot of guys with pride in their organization, and there's always a bunch of them show up at the memorial to pay tribute to their fallen comrades.
Which, incidentally, is moving to Colorado next year.
Yes, it is.
Or maybe it's in the process of getting moved.
It's someplace between Roanoke, Virginia, and Colorado Springs as we speak.
Very cool. Well, I can't wait to go there next year. I feel like I've missed a lot with it being back east, so I hope to make it. Kyle, did you have something to say?
Oh, I was just saying, I was looking at the picture of that staff, and it's absolutely gorgeous, because initially I was looking at the rifles going, EMS rifles, and then, you know, police and the fire had their own respective, and then I scrolled down looking online here and saw the staff, and it was just, it's beautiful. It's absolutely amazing.
And it really, and like Skip said, it really does set us apart, It's very meaningful, and I, you know, for some reason, I also get this, I get this image in my head of kind of this old sage, wise guy, you know, in long robes, and he has this staff with a snake coming around it, and he points it to the heavens or whatever, and he's healing something, and that to me just, it breathes a lot of life into our profession, and it really talks to the history and the heritage of what we're really about. And it's about medical care, and it's about healthcare, and it's about all those things. And we really need to remember that sometimes, and I don't think we do a good job of that. Skip, you also mentioned in your article, too, that talking about the idea of swearing people in. I don't currently do that in my organization, but How do you start something like that? You know, we get our academy in, and I just swear them in, and then everybody goes, well, what was that about? You know, should I start with everybody that's on staff now and then go to the next class? Or how's the best way to do that?
I don't know. The nice thing about starting something from scratch is you can start it from scratch the way your organization sees fit. You know, you might sit down and talk to the guys and see what they think. I know when I initiated that practice at Wake County EMS, we did a number of things at one time. And that kicked in concurrent with issuing. We have a new agency badge that we did a couple of years ago.
That's really cool, by the way.
Thank you. And when we issued that, we took the opportunity to swear in all the existing employees when they got their new badge. And we did it at that point we were having monthly all day in services. Since trimmed back a little bit because of budget constraints. But in the later part of the afternoon in our day-long in-service would be part of the agenda where I dealt with management issues with the employees. And we just plugged it right in there. And, nothing especially flashy or fancy for the existing employees, but everybody repeated the oath of office that we had made up. Signed a piece of paper with the oath on it, and that was, of course, the record of the badge numbers and so on. And so we kind of set the stage, and then the next time we graduated a class, we actually did a formal, put on your dress uniform, bring your family, come stand up in front of the room and give a little talk about what it means to be part of the organization and administer the oath and take pictures and eat cookies and cake and sort of celebrate new members joining the organization, which is really what it's all about.
And how was that received by your current personnel when you did that?
The reaction ran the whole spectrum. There were a bunch of people that said, about time. We always kind of felt left out of this. Our friends joined the police department and they had a big deal. And our friends joined the fire department and they had a big deal. And we came to work and they gave us our OSHA and bloodborne pathogens thing and said, get out in the truck. So, and there were some that said, oh, this is silly. Why do we bother? But, you're going to have that kind of reaction.
It was kind of funny when I started at the town. I had to go down to town hall and take my oath to the Constitution and everything like this. There's really no one there. I just went up in front of one of the office folks there. But when we hired a new police officer, there's a whole big shindig. So it's kind of funny the difference between law enforcement, EMS, and fire. For that.
That is
well. There are. Our oath of office is sort of a ceremonial oath. We do it to mark a rite of passage where somebody becomes a functioning member of the organization. But there are offices such as town councilman, county commissioner, police officer, deputy sheriff, where you can't work. Your work has no legal effect until you've taken the oath. So, it's got a long history with law enforcement officers, for example, of having to be formally sworn in, and of course they've had a lot more time to develop ceremony around that.
Now, Skip, a question I bring up, a lot of these ceremonies and traditions you see in municipal-based services, a lot of them came out of that. How would you suggest of bringing something like this in, or would it even fly in a commercial service?
I haven't done it in the commercial environment. I have done some of it in a hospital-operated service, but I do know that, the biggest gathering so far of EMS Honor Guard people, who are usually sort of the spearhead of this kind of stuff in their organizations, at the memorial, there are always very nicely turned out, well-trained Honor Guards from a number of AMR subunits in the commercial world, FM Ambulance, Fargo-Moorhead, from North Dakota, has a delegation there, and they look sharp. And when you talk to those guys, they do all the same stuff. It's just a matter of somebody deciding that this is one of the things that we want to do to help make our organization special. At least in my two cents worth. I don't know. You know, somebody else may have a different opinion.
Right.
I know. I was just wondering because I've worked in. This is my first official municipal position. I've worked for Flight EMS. I've worked for nonprofit and for-profit services. And I was just wondering.
Hello.
Sign.
Sorry about
the nice thing is Chris can edit this little segment out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Through the magic of editing, we can do a lot, which is very cool. You know what's funny though is sometimes I don't even edit it out. I'm like, it sounds really good. It's kind of funny. And it adds to the realism.
Like listen to one of the podcasts, you're like, I'll cut this out, and like the next week I listen to it. Hey,
it's still in.
Yeah, oh really. Man. No, I guess what I was looking at was in terms of recruitment and retention. I've been, I worked anywhere. This is my first municipal job working for the town, but I worked for nonprofits. I worked for commercial services. And the one thing we've seen a lot of those is high rate of turnover. And I'm wondering if by starting to indoctrinate this aspect of creating tradition and these ceremonies, if that may actually create a sense of pride and henceforth retain employees.
Well, you know, I sure would like to think that's the case. You know, I've evolved a couple of tests of whether this is a good thing or not over a couple of years. And I really started that because one of the other things I've done that I didn't mention in the article is, you know, I give commendation bars for stuff. You know, you get a cardiac arrest save, you get a commendation bar, you all sorts of different things with a sort of a full program. And you give people these enamel bars that signify different achievements, much like the military gives ribbons to people for various achievements and things they've done, places they've been, and what have you. And nobody's required to wear them. But they do, which tells me that recognition is enjoyed and appreciated. You know, people in my organ, we have an annual cardiac arrest save celebration where everybody involved in the cardiac arrest save, the dispatcher, the first responders, police, fire, the EMS medics, they all come together and we invite the survivors and their families. And it's just cool to have, you know, 300-400 rescuers and 50 or 60 people they've saved and their families all in the same room, getting a chance to see each other sometimes for the first time since the event, and to, you know, talk about, you know, anybody who feels someday, you know, when they're on their fourth copaine call of the day, that what they do doesn't matter. You can look out in a room and see spouses and husbands and wives and children and parents who get to see each other now, who might not have got to see each other anymore, but for the efforts of the EMS folks. And people get excited when that time comes. And if we were to skip a year for some reason, people would be unhappy. So I'm thinking it helps to promote togetherness and comradeship and recognition from your peers of your good achievements.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, anyone can show that, you know, positive reinforcement is much better than negative reinforcement.
Yeah, we're really spend way too much time in EMS on negative reinforcement. And in my sense, not enough time on positive reinforcement because you know what? It's work. I've just gone through another little lull where, I'm very dependent on first line supervisors to identify, report, and recognize above and beyond the call of duty acts and achievements of employees. And every now and again, we'll go through a lull when they'll get busy and I won't hear anything for months. And then I got to go to my staff and shake them up and say, okay, did your all employees become screw-ups or have y'all just forgotten to remember they do good stuff and to tell me about it?
If you did that.
And then we get it back on track.
We actually did a positive reinforcement at one of the commercial services that I was at, and it goes in the whole customer service aspect about fish, but anytime someone would write something good about a crew or we saw something positive or got positive feedback, in terms of peers, we would actually go ahead and reward them, and it worked pretty well for quite a while.
So Skip, how do you, or what is your normal everyday uniform? Do you, I take it your people don't wear a badge every day, do they?
Well, sometimes.
Okay, we do.
Well, you do? Okay.
We do.
I'm in this eternal struggle in my own mind as well as in my own agency where we have these soft uniforms that I'll call them. It's a really nice polo shirt with very nice black pants, and everybody looks very, very nice. However, I just want to take it up a notch sometimes, and I'm trying to decide, do we just buy a uniform shirt and badge and all of that stuff for the times that we need it to take it up a notch, or is it something that we just go to all the time? I can tell you that the general feeling in my organization is, we'd like to take it up a notch, but we're very comfortable. So I'm trying to balance the idea of comfort and looking nice with the idea of looking nice, but yet taking it up a notch. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, when I joined Wake County EMS, the standard daily work uniform was the short sleeve white military style shirt, patches, badge, name tag, what have you. I've never been a big fan of white because I always seem to wind up with the footprints of the first patient of the day plastered on my abdomen for the rest of the day. So we worked with that for a while, and last summer, two summers ago, that we always had the battle with T-shirts. You know, here in North Carolina, it gets plenty hot and plenty humid.
Right.
And folks wanted to wear regular old T-shirts with EMS stenciled on the back. And that was tough for me because that's, manual laborers wear T-shirts to work. Professionals don't. So after struggling with that for a couple of summers, we actually invested in a summer uniform, polo-style uniform shirt. And you might best recognize it as a bike team shirt. It's two-color. Line paramedics wear royal blue over black. And it's got epaulettes and contrasting collars and stuff like that. And on the back in white is stenciled Wake County EMS, and EMS is stenciled on the sleeves. And then on the chest, you may not be familiar with what was our rendition of an English police bell. If you look at police soft uniforms in the UK, there's this bell-shaped thing that'll have the emblem of their service on it, and it says police underneath in pretty big white letters that's shaped like a bell. So we had some made that have a replica of our metal badge stenciled in the middle of it, and it says paramedic in big white letters underneath. And that's sewn on the chest. Actually, 2 months ago, somebody wearing the uniform was on the cover of EMS magazine in support of my career ladders article. So you can have a look on the EMS magazine website from May, June, July, May or June, and see that on the cover. So that's the day-to-day uniform. In summer, it's short sleeve. In winter, it's long sleeve. If we do special events or public appearances or educational things, we'll wear the white shirt with the regalia on it. Our officers, our district chiefs and above, and our honor guard have a a dress blue uniform. That's a you know, blue police style, military style coat and trousers. It's decorated with some striping that is related to our organizational heritage, and they wear that for very formal things.
Very cool.
I just pulled up that cover, Skip, and you're right. That's actually a very sharp-looking uniform for a summer uniform.
Well, you know, they're not cheap, but they don't show, you know, day-to-day operational dirt very well, and they breathe wonderfully, and they wick the sweat away from you. And, you know, today it was 96 degrees and with a heat index of 101 or something. Yeah. And you don't want it. It doesn't show, you know, sweat stains and look nasty.
Hey, Kyle, can you send me that link?
Sure. It's Mayo 9.
Okay, it's on their website, yep. But I can't find it. So if you show, that way everybody listening can go to the website and take a look too.
Yeah.
Thanks. Go ahead, Kyle. You had something else.
It's interesting. This is the first system that I've worked in that I've worn since such a formal uniform. As Skip knows, we're actually a police based service, so we still go along the lines of the police traditions: full uniform, badge. Bulletproof vests, you know, for all that, everything we have on us as police, which is a whole other thing to look at. But it's the first time I've actually been dressed like that. I worked for commercial services, you know, wearing the standard, you know, the typical EMS uniform, you know, epaulette shirt. I've worn polo shirts and such. And
okay, this is an age check for you. Did you ever wear white pants?
Oh. I never had to wear white pants because the service that wore I worked in the opposite service that wore the white pants.
Okay.
In so Buffalo you wore, in the
you,
day.
You worked for not Twin Cities, but the other one.
Towns.
Okay. We're gonna have to talk some offline. we know people, I'm sure. But there was a time in Buffalo when actually, one of the guys I work with down here, one of the chiefs of one of our contract agencies, Danny Klein, worked for Twin Cities for years. And, you know, they would take care of the hood in the projects in Buffalo wearing white pants. You had to be there. It would
But, you know,
tell me something. I'm interested because this is, you know, moving from whatever the commercial service you were working for was into the Tonawanda paramedics. Do you find the people relate to you or react to you any differently than they did when you were wearing the private corporate colors?
They did, and they still do. And I even noticed it today because the commercial service that comes in, we don't actually transport. We provide ALS response, and we'll hop on the ambulance because they send us an EMT ambulance. We'll hop on and provide the ALS to the hospital if we need to. But they come in, and their summer uniforms are polo shirts and typical EMS pants. And, you know, and I think the other thing is it's not only what you wear, but it's how you wear it. Oftentimes they come in with shirts untucked, hats on backwards. And it's that type of a uniform sometimes allows for that, where being in this very formal uniform that we're in and looking at the uniform, you know, your summer uniform from Wake County, you almost need to keep everything tucked in and appropriate for it to look well. Because I think sometimes every day, if we just wear a polo shirt, if I'm going out to dinner, you know, to a non-fancy restaurant, wearing a polo shirt, I probably don't have it tucked in. I probably have it hanging out. Where if I have a button-down shirt, it's tucked in my pants and everything's appropriate.
Very good point.
Well, you know, go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just going to wrap it up, but go ahead. One final thing there.
I think it also depends on where you are. You know, I worked up in northern Maine, down east Maine, you know, up in Dover Foxcroft, and, you know, they didn't require such a formal uniform. We were out in the backwoods a lot of times, so we had a polo shirt and pants. But that was not, you know, we weren't, that was normal. You know, that was actually dressed up for some of those areas.
Yet, the state of Maine EMS Association has a first class statewide honor guard. in full dress that comes to came to Roanoke every year. It's about the right thing in the right place at the right time. We go to some of the we kind of drifted away from ceremony into uniform.
But that was my fault.
but that's okay. You go to doing presentations before your elected officials. It always struck me as being, sort of inappropriate, but I didn't know what to do about it at the time. But when I first became the state EMS director in Oregon, I would often find myself in legislative sessions around other folks. And I would inevitably be, the police would be represented by the superintendent of state police, the president of the state sheriff's association, and the president of the state association of chiefs of the police. And they'd be there in their uniforms looking good and presenting their profession in a way that people recognize it. And then the fire service would be present in the persons of the state fire marshal, the state forester, the head of the state forest fire service, and the president of the state fire chiefs association in their uniforms and representing their profession in a way that was recognizable. And then here came the EMS guys, and I was the state guy. I was in a business suit. Some of the other guys would be in sport coats, and inevitably somebody would be there in a polo shirt or sweatshirt. And you get one chance to make a first impression, and it sticks. And if you have a chance to make your first impression a good one, I think you ought to take it.
Absolutely.
I love that theory, and the way you presented it, just it's perfect. I love it.
I mean, you can see it, can't you?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've been in that room, and I feel like I feel underdressed, even though I'm in a suit. So you just can't take it up to that level without some other, without all of the garb and whatnot. So I definitely agree.
When you choose what to put on for work in the morning, if you're serious about what you're doing, that should be a strategic decision. And, guys I work with, we'll talk about it all the time. There will be, today I'm doing X, it's a coat and tie day. Today I'm doing Y, it's a dress uniform day. Thursday is the opening of the Southeast Region Firefighters Convention, and we're going to go pay them a visit, and we're going to dress strategically to do that. Otherwise, you have an inconsistent image, and you present a mishmash that doesn't strengthen your position. And I think we need to strengthen our position all we can.
Very nice. So any last thoughts on tradition and ceremony from your article, or just general thoughts?
No, this is about all this stuff is about pride and unity and recognition of self. There are various ways to do this. There's no one right answer for any organization, there's probably a right answer for each organization, but it's certainly not the same amongst any two organizations. I guess I'll say that I think leaders in EMS organizations should give this subject some thought, and I don't care what they develop, but develop something for your organization where you get to show pride and appreciation and recognition for the good work you do, and have some things that can be passed down from year to year, from generation to generation, no matter what they be, that say, this is a great organization, it's a special place to be part of, and it's an honor for you to belong to us, and we appreciate you for what you do.
Very nice.
And just figure it out and go do it.
Well, cool. So that, well, you've now challenged me, so I'm gonna give it another go.
I just wanted to just share one thing real quick, Chris. We just had a retirement here, and the chief of police started a new tradition. When I was reading Skip's article and talking about retirements, they flew the flag above the station on this gentleman's last day of his full, being employed, and he retired. They gave him the flag.
Oh, that's cool. Very cool. That's very cool.
Your organization, you're kind of just getting to the first wave of retirements, isn't it? Isn't that, if I do that right?
Yeah, we've just had 3 retirements in the last 3 years. From 74 is when it started.
Yeah, because that's the first wave of people who've been there long enough. That's a time, now you'll probably have several more, and that's a great time to start, the traditions of, your small division within the larger organization. And it's kind of cool you're there with the cops because they already understand this stuff.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we've got great support through the chief of police, so that's really nice.
Oh, that's very cool. When you can get them involved and kind of start to understand their traditions, I think that's pretty neat. I think that's very good. And maybe even incorporate them into some of that.
We actually have our own honor guard.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Do you?
Yeah, we actually have our own honor guard.
You know, for a long time, your organization had one of the best EMS websites around. And one time I came up to visit, and you also had, I think, the coolest vehicle wrap going at the time. They were...
Ugh.
Did we lose them?
I think we did. Okay, well, at least you're still there, so we didn't drop internet again. Well, I'll bring him back on in a minute.
Who's that?
Oh, hello, there you are. Now you're back.
I'm here.
We lost.
Did I drift away?
You did.
Oh,
so
okay.
You were saying something about the coolest vehicle wrap.
Oh, yeah. They had, somebody had taken their EMS vehicle at the time was a Suburban, I think, and instead of like having the usual striping, it had been, that artistic wrap that they do on vehicles, like the nose of the vehicle had been done in the American flag for some reason. I had no idea what it was, and it just looked cool. It's a neat organization.
It still is. We have 3 of those, and they're all with the American flag and a big badge, and they look like police vehicles. Still on the website.
Except they say paramedic on the side.
They do.
That's a good thing.
Kyle, you're going to have to send us that website so I can link to it for sure.
I'll do that.
Hey, are either of you going to... I ask you this every week because I never remember, but are either of you going to Expo?
No.
Plus, it's a nice...
I will be at Expo.
Okay. Plus,
we
it's
are,
a nice segue.
We are doing several speeches at Expo.
Are you? Oh, you're doing the NEMSMA thing at Expo.
And there are some... did I lose you again?
No, I'm here. We're here.
Oh, you're there? Okay, it got real quiet.
Okay.
I have several presentations at Expo, and the NEMSMA annual meeting is at Expo, and we're going to have a special session on leadership issues in EMS that I'd invite everybody who's interested to come to.
And so even if I'm not a leader in EMS, can I join? Or can I come and be part of that meeting?
Well, it's going to focus on leadership issues, so you can either be a leader or somebody who wants to be there.
Okay.
And come on.
And they get to meet you, which is great.
And Gary.
Oh, and Gary.
And Woody and Aaron and all the gang from the NEMSMA Board of Directors.
Very cool. Is, the gentleman from North Carolina? No, Don Lundy. Where's he from?
Don is from Charleston County, South Carolina.
South Carolina, right.
And I don't know if Don will be there or not. Don's not, as far as I know, an active NEMSMA member. He may be, not to disrespect him at all.
Right. Well, he always has that sound for radio, so I was like, I like his voice. I love hearing him at meetings.
Oh, Don's a good and entertaining speaker, too.
Yes, he is. He really is. So if you get a chance, come by, see us at EMS Expo. You guys, we keep plugging it every week, but we're going to be on EMS Expo. EMSExpoLive.com is going to be the website for us to see all of our Twitter events, to see all of the live broadcasts we're doing. All of our podcasts are going to be there. All of the video podcasts are going to be there. You can also go to EMSExpo.com. EMSExpo.com or go to the EMSResponder.com homepage and go to the EMS Expo link, and you'll find us right there. So it's going to be really cool, and I'm hoping I can con skip into doing a podcast over there. That's my hint to you now. Okay, good. Or maybe two or five or something, because we're going to do it in front of a live audience.
If you get much beyond two, I'll require a beverage.
Oh, there will be plenty of libations, and it will be in front of a live audience, which is even more fun.
And I don't know if those two are a good combination.
Well, maybe I'll get you liquored up and then get you in front of the live audience. I don't know.
There you
like,
go.
Where am I going? I'll be like, oh, come on over, Skip. Well, it'll be fun.
Judging by the activities of several last conferences, I could wear my kilt and ride a Segway and play the bagpipes. We're all set.
I want video of that.
That would be great.
Okay. We'll be there. Actually, it's going to be a great program, and we'll have a good time.
I know. I'm so excited to go this year. I'm really super stoked. So, Kyle, if you can, come on down, or at least watch us on the internet and make fun of my face, because that'll be a lot of fun. Well, thanks to EMS Expo and their support of the EMS Garage, and go to their website right now, emsresponder.com, and look at all their great news stories, and go to the EMS Magazine, and you'll be able to even look at Skip Kirkwood's article from this month, and we really appreciate their support. Finally, tonight, I wanted to talk about the EMT that was brought up on murder, most foul indictments.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to see what you guys thought about that, and talk about how the story goes. And if I remember right, this was an EMT that was driving an ambulance. She happened to be intoxicated on pills, if I remember right. That's what I remember. This is from the news report. This is all allegedly, of course. And she had somebody in the back, and she crashed the ambulance. And as a result, somebody died. Am I hitting the nail on the head there?
Yeah.
Yes, you are. I've actually been, for the last year, I've actually been using the video from the TV station at the time of the immediate aftermath of the collision as a training video for a couple of different presentations, one on impaired employees and another one on crisis communications for chief officers. And this is, the news that the EMT was finally indicted for murder is kind of stale news. The original article, the original video had, the reporters had all the incident reports from everybody who was involved in their hands that they got through some Freedom of Information inquiry. And this was a great case study for a couple of things. One is why every agency should train all its personnel and have a good policy about impaired employees. The second is why if you have a suspicion that somebody you're working with is impaired, you need to stop the bus immediately and deal with it. In the original report, the partner of this EMT who was driving had been sending text messages to other people to please call the supervisors and have them meet at the hospital so that they could relieve her of her duty. Not right now, after we get to the hospital. Of course, on the way to the hospital was when the event occurred.
I think that's the tragic thing, is she was getting transported for a nosebleed, and the patient died.
Yeah, the patient was being transported for a nosebleed. I don't know that it was a lights and sirens case, but she either swerved. There was somebody behind her said, she was swerving all over the road and what have you. And, that... that was a preventable occurrence. They had hours and days and weeks notice that there was something going on with this employee. She'd had mood changes. She had behavioral changes at work. She had been impaired a previous day, such that her partner said, she had been loopy on the job. And of course, you never know all the facts because you weren't there. You can only talk about what you've seen and read. But this was a significant organizational failure to look out for its own people.
Now, Skip, just a quick question. I'm just reading the article that one of the many articles that was there says that, you know, she's turning off the ambulance's emergency lights when she looked up and saw a pedestrian and swerved and hit a utility pole. Where did it strike the utility pole on the ambulance?
I have a picture of it, but I have a picture of the struck utility pole, but I can't tell you where it hit on the box. But I think the vehicle rolled.
I was going to say the problem was it rolled after it hit.
I mean, are we looking at a multifaceted issue here? I mean, number one, you've got an ambulance driver, we never use that word on here, didn't we? But that's what she's doing. She's driving an ambulance that was impaired. But was this patient also properly secured, in the ambulance? Not seeing the trauma to the box of the ambulance, I really can't tell you that. I was just wondering.
Yeah, don't know that, but I do know that, where she says she swerved to avoid a pedestrian. The problem is that there was an eyewitness who said there was no pedestrian.
Oh.
Well, the family of the lady was, if I remember the original report, the family of the lady was following, or somebody was following, and said they saw and they witnessed the entire accident.
Yep. Yeah, that was, my recollection is that was an independent third party.
Okay, there you go.
Who witnessed the whole thing, and there was no pedestrian, so swerved to avoid a boy or something. But I will, if you guys want to make sure I get your email, Chris, I have yours, but Kyle, I don't. If you want to make sure I get your email addresses, I'll send you that original video so that you can, make your blood pressure go even higher. This was not a good day for Metro Louisville EMS.
Well, I was going to say, couldn't we also say that that her partner had some culpability because she didn't, I mean, she had said, or you had said, she was texting people saying she thought this was going on. Shouldn't she have taken everything in her power to stop doing everything, or did she not, or did she feel powerless? I don't know.
Well, and in a previous incident, this is the one that makes my medical director's head fly off. The partner reports that on a previous day when there was what I would call an impairment issue, the partner had relieved her as a driver and assigned her to patient care duties.
Oh.
So, that kind of makes the medical side of things go a little spastic.
That's a little scary, yeah.
Yeah. This was a person who probably... if the information provided to us is accurate, should have long been off a truck into some sort of a program to get assisted, because in the documentation that the TV station had, she had admitted to previous narcotics use and a bunch of other stuff, and to getting pills not through a physician prescription, didn't say what the pills were, but got the pills from a friend. There's just all kinds of red flags, flares being shot up, fireworks going off. This was an employee who was a problem waiting to happen. And the organization wasn't quite set up to detect and deal with it in the manner that they ought to.
Do you think sometimes people look at that and feel that it's almost it's too hard to believe? No, they wouldn't ever do that in this business. Do you think we have that sensation?
Sure. And I also believe that we think, we need to look out for our partners and so on. This has been going on in public safety for years. And every now and again, it it's not a problem till it's a problem. You hear about, police officers looking out for their partners who show up for work impaired, and firefighters hiding the guy who, chief comes around, hiding the guy who came on duty drunk. And it's not a problem until it becomes a problem, and then it's a big, nasty problem.
I have a feeling it's probably a bigger issue in our industry than we lead on to believe. I really do. I mean, I know I've had... I've not personally had, but I've had... partners on other ambulances say, yeah, this guy showed up, he was a little hungover or whatever, and you're just like, man, go home, don't even show up. It's not worth anything at that point.
Well, many of our organizations have impairment structurally built into their organization.
Right.
Yeah, the data that was presented in the when the Circadian Corporation studied Austin, Texas EMS for workload and work schedules and so on, if you have been up for 18 hours, your level of impairment is the same as if your blood alcohol was 0.8.
Oh, wow.
Which is the legal limit. So now we have people who assign people to work a 24-hour shift with no guarantee that they will get sleep before that critical 18th hour. So, you know, impaired by fatigue, impaired by alcohol, impaired by drugs, what's the difference? You're still impaired and can't do your job and you're dangerous.
Very good point. And you should, and we as administrators and providers should be uniquely aware of that, and shouldn't allow people to let that. Yeah.
Right, but in many cases, it's more important that I get my 20 days off a month than it is that I be fully functional when I'm at work on my 10 days that I work.
Do you guys do random drug testing?
Chris?
Random from the sense that, yeah, sure, yes. I won't tell you how it's randomized, but yes.
Gotcha. We do not. We do pre-employment, and we do for cause.
There you go. That's what I was going
to
say.
We don't do random. And what we did, we had to. This is probably another show, actually.
It is. We could probably move right from here into leadership if you want, because this is a good topic for leadership to talk about drug testing and whatnot. Hang on. Let me see where we're at as far as time-wise, and then maybe we will, if you guys are up for it. Yeah, actually, we're 1 hour for the garage. So if you guys are up for it, we can move into another hour of the EMS leadership and talk about good employment practices, when you're hiring and while they're employed by you. So how do you feel about that?
Oh, boy.
See, and then people could be like, to be continued. How do you feel? or Skip, are you done?
No, I'm good.
Okay, cool. All right, well, Kyle, where can we find you on Twitter, Facebook, or any of those other social media?
Facebook, I'm on there, EMS United, and my website, KyleDavidBates.com.
KyleDavidBates.com, very cool website. Go there. Skip, how about you, sir? You're on EMS United. Or no, GEMS Connect.
I've been on GEMS Connect mostly. On Facebook. Kyle, hook with me on Facebook. I want to talk to you some more. Find out everything I can about what's going on in Tonawanda.
Absolutely.
And
very cool.
What a pleasant surprise. Good job, Chris.
Right on. Well, thank you guys very much. Thanks for joining us on the EMS Garage this week. Join us next week when we talk more about EMS issues. Hopefully next week we'll have Dr. Stewart on. We're hoping to get him on very soon. And right now, we're going to, if you're so inclined, go right over to the EMSleadership.com. Yeah, we're still here. EMSleadership.com website and listen in on the rest of the show.